BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. And, for rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway today is Baroness Arminka Hellage. When she was sworn into the House of Lords as a life peer in 2014, the upper chamber got a sprinkling of stardust. She was watched by her good friend Angelina Jolie, while Hillary Clinton sent her congratulations. As special advisor to the former Foreign Secretary William Hague, she's credited with persuading him to launch a high-profile campaign against rape as a weapon of war. Her own moral framework comes from personal experience. Born in Bosnia-Herzegovina, she was in her early 20s when simmering tensions erupted in the former Yugoslavia, leading to one of the bloodiest European conflicts in recent history. One of the lucky ones, she fled her homeland in dramatic fashion with only a leather jacket and a can of hairspray to her name. She arrived at Heathrow Airport as a refugee in 1992, scarred by what she'd seen and bewildered by London. Over the course of the next 20 years, she was, in her own words, seduced by politics and made it her mission to bring compassion and humanity to foreign policy. She says, "My moral radar is in the right place and I'm uncompromising on what I believe in. I've been given a chance and the skills to make a difference. It makes me uncomfortable to know that I could help, but I'm not helping." Arminka Hellage, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you very much.
So it was almost 22 years to the day between you touching down at Heathrow as a refugee and being sworn into the Lords. You must have reflected on the contrast between those two moments many times.
I didn't think about it as something that was telling about me. I thought about that moment as something that was very telling about the United Kingdom. Where else in the world would someone like me, that should for every other reason not be there? I mean, if you were to think about me coming in as a refugee, raised up as a little communist pioneer of a religion that was not very popular. You know, my parents are Muslim, or were Muslim. And I never thought I would end up being either a member of parliament or definitely not a member of the House of Lords. I mean, I thought that being in the House of Lords, you have to have a castle. And I didn't have a castle. I didn't even have a house.
I think you've said in the past that you sometimes suffer from imposter syndrome. How much does it bother you?
I wouldn't say there is a feeling of guilt, but there is a feeling of the need to prove that I'm worthy of that seat and I'm worthy of being listened to and I'm worthy of sharing my experiences.
William Hague said you're a fun person to be around.
I travelled a lot with William as his special advisor. And because we would be jet-lagged, we would go out on a walk around the town in sort of 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. And his protection officers obviously hated that. They all wanted to go to bed. And I would always say, like, what we should do, we should go and try the beer here. And I would get there, I was like, my God, this is awful. But I just had this desire. I thought if you don't know what a pub or a bar looks like, all you see are conferences rooms and, you know, you may as well stay behind.
It's time to hear your first piece of music, Arminka Hellage. Tell me about it. Why have you chosen this?
Tereza Kesovje is a Croatian singer. I listened to her a lot when I was probably 8, 9, 10, 11. I always wanted to meet her. There was this program on Sundays called Sunday Afternoon. And I would watch it and you could write to meet your favorite person. And I used to write forever, hoping that they are going to pick me up. Never did. I think maybe it was all fixed. I think about it now. It's called Prijatelji stari gdje ste, my old friends, where are you? It is kind of a song looking back at the times where everyone was friend. Today the people are dispersed around the world. It's loaded with a meaning for me today. Prijatelji stari gdje ste, ću vas ikad naći, kažite mi što to znači kad u ponoć netko svira. Prijatelji stari gdje ste, pamtite li ove zvuke, iznad dvora, iznad luke, dok se bijeli krila galeba.
prijatelji stari gdje ste, kao zraka mladost mine.
Tereza Kesovia, Where Are You Now? Arminka Helic, you grew up in Gračanica, northeast Bosnia, then it was part of communist Yugoslavia, and you were one of five girls, all of you high flyers and highly educated. Your father was a military man, your mother ran the house.
What do you remember about growing up? As I mentioned, obviously Yugoslavia was a communist country at that point, and you were in the party youth organisation when you were six.
It was quite so dramatic almost. They would put you in a hall, youth hall. You swear allegiance to Yugoslavia, Social Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, and to the Communist Party, and to President Tito as a supreme commander, and you would become a pioneer, and then you'd become a communist. I never became a communist because I was kind of disappointed in it. I was probably one of those rare ones when I was called in and said, you're 14, you're a very good student, we have made a decision, you're going to be accepted in the Communist Party. And I remember sitting, it's so funny, I was sitting at this long desk with other sort of few people like me, and I was given tea, and I said, I can't do that. And the leader of the communist local communist party said to me, what do you mean you can't do that? I said, I can't, the party is corrupt. And I took my took my tea, and I remember I drank it, and you could hear tea traveling through my mouth all the way down, because everyone was like, I wouldn't say shell-shocked, but it was like, and what happens now? I knew at the time that there were some people were extremely well off and some people were kind of really working their guts out, and they were not in a good place. And people who were making progress were people who were members of the Communist Party. I think I had a little bit of a feeling of the right and wrong, and that was it. I went to high school and then I went to university.
Yes, the University of Sarajevo.
University of Sarajevo. I went to. I initially wanted to study medicine, but then quickly changed it because of a particular song that I liked. I discovered English language.
And I think that leads us to your second disc. Tell us about it.
My second disc is Cambodia, sung by Kim Wilde, who at the time I knew everything about. I was a proper fan.
Did you aspire to anything beyond the music? I mean, she had quite a distinctive look.
Oh, I want to have that hair. Like, it's like I actually tried. It didn't look anything like it.
But I've seen a few pictures. I think you were getting close.
I was getting close, but
was your method? What was
my method was to combine beer and washing soap. And I also invested a lot of money in hairspray.
Kim Wilde and Cambodia. Arminka Helic, your family were Bosnian Muslims then. How big a part did religion play at home?
Non-existent. I was brought up to think religion is opium for masses and kind of stayed with me.
Had your town been multicultural while you were growing up?
Yes. My friends were guys and girls, not names, not religion. And I must say, I'll put it on the record, I think sameness is boring, different is beautiful. If you are able to communicate and live side by side and together with people who do not necessarily come from your background, come from your colour, come from your ethnicity, from your religion, and you show who you are, if you can only live with your lot, you got a serious problem. I genuinely never, ever thought that it would be possible to suffer at the hands of your neighbours and of your friends until the very moment where you could almost see the tanks.
And what was that moment? What do you remember your first inkling?
This is what happens, basically. You have so-called Yugoslav National Army comes and encircles the town, blocks all the radio and TV stations, so you are completely, you have no idea what's going on, marks all the houses of non-Serbs, releases paramilitaries who rape, separate and kill. And then a badly injured
man from Doboj was sent to deliver a message to Gračanica, my hometown, to surrender. And he had a list of names of the families that are going to be first to be killed. And my family's name was on the list. My father decided that we were all going to leave. He was going to stay, but we were going to leave. And we were driven to the border with Croatia. The bridges between Croatia and Bosnia have already been blown up. So we crossed on a raft, River Sava. I got separated with my sister from the rest of our family. We were about to cross and shelling started. And that was my first sound of war that I heard. That wasn't on TV. That wasn't someone telling me what it feels like. And it's a really interesting because it goes up. And you kind of, and you know someone somewhere has just had it. You're just trying to survive. You see all these, and I just remember looking for a column of people, and there's my teacher, and there are her children, and there is a lady who worked in a shop, and there is my mother.
I mean, I can see the emotion on your face thinking about that, looking back to that moment.
Yeah.
Faces that you knew from your community with scant possessions, whatever they'd been able to grab as they had to leave.
And you see that they're humiliated because they're people who are dragging these suitcases. They're on a raft, begging someone to take them over the river. That is what I think of when I hear people being negative towards people who are seeking safety. I always want to remember that they too had a teacher and a mother. And that's when I went to Foreign Office. I wanted to bring that in. They're not just numbers. 75 million displaced and refugees today. They're not just 75 million boring people who take our aid. There's 75 million people who have left because they couldn't stay. And we somehow have lost a bit of humanity to recognize. Being a refugee is not a choice. You don't make a choice. You're forced to leave.
It's time for some more music. Let's go to your next disc. Why have you chosen this one? Tell us about it.
It's called Krajtanana Šadravana, and it is a song that I remember my parents listening to. My father would come back from work around 3 o'clock. We would pack picnic and go to the hills where my grandfather had a little cottage. And in the afternoon on Radio Sarajevo, there would be these old songs and they would listen to them. And at the time, you can imagine, I just was yawning from here to Australia, basically. But these days, I just look at it as like, that was really quite beautiful.
Zajma Marmovic with Near a Tiny Fountain. Armin Kahelic, you made it to Croatia and then a friend smuggled you and your sister into Slovenia. How long did you stay there?
I was there for a few months, hoping to go back home. But as you can imagine, by that time, that's sort of July, August 1992, Ed Vuliami, journalist from The Guardian, Penny Marshall, journalist from ITV, Maggie Kane, journalist from The Guardian, have uncovered first concentration camps in Bosnia. And that famous cover, which I still have on my mobile phone, from the Time magazine, of men behind a barbed wire. You can see their sort of bones has come out.
And you keep that on your phone?
Yeah.
Why?
To remember. I don't want to forget. I want it to be out there because that is who I am. It's part of me.
While you're in Slovenia, you wrote to a friend in London. What did you say in your letter?
I said, I'm worried that because I don't speak Slovene and I can't go out in order not to be picked up, I'm going to forget my English. Would you send me some books? And she sent me a box of books, one of them being Chamomile Lawn, still have a copy, and another one with London Fields.
So the books were delivered in person by Lady Miloška Knott. She's the wife of the former government minister, Sir John Knott. So she's from Slovenia herself and had set up the Fund for Refugees. So that meant she travelled back and forth between London and Slovenia, helping refugees.
She found me in Gornja Radgona. I mean, that is it's a dot on the border between Slovenia and Austria. And she brought these books and I looked at it and I opened it. There was a letter, a beautifully written letter, and there was a plane ticket. And I was with my sister and I said, well, I can't go because I can't leave my sister. I've already been separated from the rest of my family. If I get separated from her, we're going to be all over the place. And she left. 3 days later, she came back and she said, how about you both come? And she bought a ticket for my sister and the two of us came to Heathrow Terminal 2.
October the 3rd, 1992.
That's correct.
So you'd gone from being in a place you describe as a dot on a map,
yes,
in a very difficult situation, waking up in Chelsea?
Yes.
It must have been a bit like waking up on the moon, waking up in Chelsea.
More or less. I remember there was a Safeways on the King's Road and going to Safeways. And I was standing there and, they're on the till and it goes beep, beep, beep. And I just standing there and I was like, these people don't know that there is a war going on in Yugoslavia.
It's time for your next piece of music. Tell us about this one.
It's Fast Car by Tracy Chapman. I remembered it very vividly when I heard this. I entered a bedroom that I was given to sleep in. There was a record player and there was a record on it. And the first thing, being someone who absolutely loves music, I walked towards it and I lifted the little arm and pulled it to the right and put it down.
So I remember when we were driving in your car, speed so fast it felt like I was drunk. City lights day out before us and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder and I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone.
Tracy Chapman and Fast Car, the first song you heard in your new bedroom in the UK, Arminka Helic. Life was starting to take shape for you, whether you wanted it to or not. You did start to kind of fall into a routine and were living with the Knotts.
Mm-hmm.
And it was then that you got a place at the LSE. How did you manage that and why did you go there?
I started working in Häagen-Dazs. I loved that, not only because there were 13 flavours of ice cream, but it was quite a lot of fun.
We should say that among your many achievements, you were Waitress of the Year twice.
Yes,
At your branch?
Yes, I was at my branch on the King's Road. I was Waitress of the Year, got 2 T-shirts.
Well done.
I went to LSE because I tried to, particularly with Sir John Knott, argue the case for intervention. But you have to remember, it's 1992, they're saying that everyone hates everyone in Bosnia. One shouldn't get involved there. And I was trying to argue this. And Sir John said to me, completely straight face, you sound like a communist apparatchik. You don't know how to argue. You don't know how to present your case. You should really go and get a decent degree. Number one, I was upset. I was like, I've got a decent degree. Thank you very much. Number two, I was like, okay, I'll get it. Just because you told me that I'm just going to prove you wrong. I went to LSE. I've actually walked into someone's office and said, I come from Bosnia. I need education. And Professor Stevenson, who was teaching international history, said, fine. And I did a master's degree in international history. I was very proud.
So tell me about your political worldview and how that was changing. Your interest in politics was obviously really growing, and it sounds like you were having a lot of very interesting debates and conversations.
I was very lucky to, through the knots, to meet Lady Thatcher, who is one of the people that really inspired me, because in 1990s, when everyone wanted to wash their hands of the suffering in Bosnia, she was the one who actually very actively and very clearly saw that the major source of instability was Belgrade and nationalist politics of President Milosevic, very clearly called for certain action to take place. And I had a few occasions, I was privileged to meet her, and I joined Conservative Party.
It's time for some more music. It's your fifth disc today. Why have you chosen this one?
It's called Pljuni i zapjevaj moja Jugoslavia. It's a song by Bijelo Dugme. This is a song that came out just before the war, addressed to Yugoslavia, that feels the winds of change. And it calls on Yugoslavia to get up and start singing. And those who can't hear it as a song, they'll hear it as a storm.
Bijelo Dugme with Spit and Start Singing My Yugoslavia. So, Arminka Helic, your first job at Westminster was in the House of Commons Library, filing press cuttings. And it was there that you were spotted and started working for MPs, including Robert Key, Ian Duncan-Smith, Liam Fox and William Hague, Shadow Foreign Secretary. What was it, do you think, that they saw in you?
I think they saw someone who was just happy to have a chance and privileged to be accepted, and keen to prove that I have something to give back.
You became William Hague's senior special advisor in 2010 when he was appointed foreign secretary in coalition government. It was around this time that you heard about a film written and directed by Angelina Jolie about a Bosnian woman's experiences in the war called In the Land of Blood and Honey. What was your reaction to the idea at first?
I was mad because I was thinking, why does a Hollywood actress who never visited, never lived, never experienced hardship of this kind, why, who gives her right to do a film about the most difficult part of the history of the country that I was born in? And then I saw that the film was shown in the Holocaust Museum in DC, and I thought, well, maybe there is something in it. So I mentioned that to William, and I often mentioned to him that, you know, women in wars in particular, go through some very, very difficult experiences. And some of my friends ended up in what infamously became known as rape camps. And I couldn't talk about it, but I kind of tried to indicate to him that this is something that was going on.
Why couldn't you talk about it?
Because out of those were other people's experiences I had no right to talk about. And to be honest, I felt ashamed. My country of birth, that my women, Bosnian women, were treated that way. But then I realized that they don't have a voice. And guess what? I just happened to be in the place where someone wants to listen. So I went to see William and I said to him, there's this film has come out. I'm going to get it. And I started watching it, and I never seen a film that's so intimately, so beautifully depicted the pain that my country of birth has been through. And William, we were on the way to Australia, and he had a little laptop, and I kept on putting this laptop in front of him to watch it. And it's such a hard film to watch, and he would watch for 10 minutes, and then he'll give it to me. I said to him, William, it's 2 hours and something, you got, but we'll see it before we reach Perth, we are going to, you know, you're going to see it. And he says, we kind of came to the conclusion that we should invite Angelina to show the film in the Foreign Office. And when we all got together in the Foreign Office, we decided, under Williams and her leadership, to set up Preventing Sexual Violence Initiative. And that was in 2012. this is a matter of generational change and of attitudes being changed. That is a crime that ought to be punished, not simply swept under the carpet because we are so desperate to have a peace deal.
Let's hear your next track on Minka Helic. What's it going to be?
Madonna. It's True Blue. I was at university for languages where 70% of the students were girls. We were matched with the young pilots school. We were going to something like a sort of a party, and I was on my way with my, I don't know, 1 million dinars. We had already had inflation then. That was for my ticket. And I was passing by a record shop, and in the window there was Madonna, True Blue. And I walked in and bought a record. I never went to that party. And I rushed back home and I put it on my record player.
Still happy with the choice of missing out on the party?
Who knows? Maybe I would have ended up with some pilots somewhere.
True Blue, Madonna. Arminka Helic, the PSVI held a four-day international summit on tackling sexual violence and war in London in 2014. It was hosted by William Hague and Angelina Jolie. What were your expectations of the event and did it achieve them?
My expectations and our collective expectations were to put that on the map, give everyone a moment to talk about what was almost invisible crime. And I think the achievement was to get, you know, Secretary John Kerry and William Hague and generals and NGOs and artists and everyone involved. And, you know, everyone talked about it. And since then, you know, we have 156 countries who have adopted the protocol for registering these crimes. But this is an ongoing work. There is no moment when we say, well, we fixed it. And I think we are marching forward, not full strength, but we are moving forward.
The summit was criticised. It was described as ineffective and costly. I think The Observer reported that the money spent hosting it was five times the amount dedicated by the UK to tackling rape in war zones mm-hmm. that year. Mm-hmm. There was also criticism about the promises made and whether they were being kept at the summit and beyond it. What's your response to that?
Delighted. I was the one who initiated setting up of the Committee on Preventing Sexual Violence. I think you can only achieve something if you are open to transparent and regular measuring of your outcomes. If in 20, 30 years' time, we can look back and say that was the beginning of the end of this being treated as a secondary crime, I would be very, very happy. If we see justice for women, not only for women of Bosnia, and we have seen some justice, but for women of Kosovo and women for Iraq, Syria, and for Yazidi women, and for women of DRC and of Angola and Haiti. If we see that for the first time there are successful prosecutions, I would say that we have succeeded.
It's time for some more music. This is your seventh. Tell us about it.
Oh, it's Vivaldi's Four Seasons is my favourite part. I love listening to this because it kind of gives me space to think, and I love intensity of winter.
Thank you.
The first movement of Vivaldi's Winter, performed by the English Concert with Simon Standage on violin, conducted by Trevor Pinnock. Arminka Helic, in your role in the House of Lords, what's your focus now?
I'm hoping that I can persuade Secretary of State for Department for International Development to dedicate 1%, one small percent of the international overseas budget to fighting violence against women.
You said earlier that you didn't experience survivor's guilt, but how has the knowledge that was by chance that you found your way out of it and by chance that you avoided the experiences that, you know, the people that you're trying to speak for and represent went through, how does that affect your point of view and your life?
Anyone who has left their home and didn't share in blood and tears, maybe in tears, not in blood, occasionally does find it quite difficult and find it something to harbours guilt. But then you can wallow in the guilt or you can try and turn it around and say, yes, but I do have this knowledge and I have this opportunity. And one should feel guilty for having your opportunity, not doing much about it.
What's the first thing you do when you go back to Bosnia?
First thing is I walk into my house, breathe in the air and remember my parents. When I arrive first, everything looks small. Some things look a bit like they were abandoned years ago, but then as hours and days pass, they become familiar again and I lose my Englishness and I reacquire my Bosnian spirit and stubbornness.
I think we'd better hear your last disc.
Yes, my last disc is actually, again, it's a singer from Croatia, Josip Alisac, and it's a song about one youth, which I am still working out what it means, but I think in essence it's a story about youth growing up under communism, believing in all the promises, but fearing that the promises may steal the beauty of youth and a time that can never be given back, but living in hope.
Jedna mladost, jedan svijet nade, raste tiho u srcu tvom. Drugi za te ovaj svijet grade, s malo prave istine u tom. Pričaju ti priče te, i svaka ima svoj sretan kraj.
Josip Alisac with About a Youth. Arminka Helic, I am casting you away to a desert island very soon. How do you think you'll get on there?
Provided there are no storms and global warming has not affected sea levels, I think I'll be okay.
You'll have two books to keep you busy. You can have the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare. Are you happy with that?
Can I go for Shakespeare?
So you leave the Bible?
Nothing against religious books, but I would probably go for something different.
Shakespeare it is. You can also take another book of your choosing. What will it be?
A DIY book.
You can also have a luxury item. What would you like to make your time on the island more enjoyable?
Pen and paper. I wouldn't need to have a conversation with maybe myself or leave a few traces of my experience for whoever comes next on a piece of paper.
And finally, which of these eight tracks, if you had to, would you save from the waves?
Disc number 3, Zajmima, which Krajtana naša drvana. I think it would be my parents' favourite song. It would be a song that reminds me of my youth and it would be a song that reminds me of a country that I was born in.
Arminka Helic, thank you very much for sharing your Desert Island Discs with us.
Thank you. Thank you for time and thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Hello. I really hope you enjoyed that interview with Arminka Helic. We're going to leave her writing her journal in the sunshine and hopefully harnessing her Bosnian spirit. Like Arminka, Baroness Helena Kennedy is a champion of civil liberties and a staunch defender of human rights. In 1998, she was cast away by Sue Lawley.
Was it acknowledged that you were clever? Yes, I think it was.
That you were going to do something the rest of the family had never done, which is go to university or...
Oh, well, no. I mean, all of my sisters are clever, and we, I think we were all rather clever at school. My older two sisters really were in, during their adolescence, it was a very bad time for our family. My father became unemployed and so on. And so I'm afraid that they didn't get the choices that were available to me because they had to, you know, they left school because they felt that they should. And in fact, came back to education later. It's one of the reasons why I feel so passionately about giving those opportunities to people. But I think that we were all considered to be rather clever at school.
What about that early life? How much has it been of use to you in the job that you eventually came to do? I mean, it, did it give you insights?
Well, I certainly knew about not being well off. I knew about hardship, and I knew that the sort of the struggles that working class people had. I also knew from my father how people were frightened of the law. I mean, he was aware of that, being involved with his union, that people were often very anxious about even, you know, suing for personal injury when they were obviously likely to succeed. The idea of becoming involved with lawyers and the law was very intimidating to ordinary folk.
Which is why you'd say it would be a foreign country. You understand why people would be intimidated by wigs or the words, the vocabulary that's used.
Just and the whole business of and the fear of it being expensive and being about people who speak in grand voices and who don't really know about the lives of ordinary people.
But your first case, I think, was to defend a woman shoplifter, a mother of three, who ended up being taken away to Holloway and shut away from her children. I mean, that must have been a terrible experience, understanding what you understand.
I went home on the bus and wept. It was terrible.
Why did you lose it?
Well, if she was, you know, she had, she was in breach of a suspended sentence, so it was a fairly automatic thing. But I still remember it very powerfully. I thought, maybe I shouldn't be here doing this at all. Maybe I'm not tough enough. Maybe I'm not, I can't stand back enough. Maybe I'm not good enough at it. And so I became determined that I was going to become very good at it.
Baroness Helena Kennedy talking to Sue Lawley.
Hello, I just wanted to tell you about my new podcast. It's called Classical Fix, and it's basically me, Clemmy Burton Hill, each week talking to a massive music fan. I mix them a classical playlist. They have a listen, they come in, and we just see where the conversation goes. If you'd like to give classical music a go, but you haven't got a clue where to start, this is where you start. To subscribe, go to BBC Sounds and search for Classical Fix. Now then, as you were.